If you could be remembered for just one thing, what would it be? Now, I heard that was actually a lyric to a song I heard maybe a week and a half ago. There were lots of lyrics, a lot of if this, if that. And one of the lyrics was, if you could be remembered for just one thing, what would it be? And that got me thinking a lot. And perhaps it's just a matter of advancing age or whatever, but when you're young, you don't think a lot about how you'll be remembered. You get older, you preach a few funerals, and you start thinking about what are they going to say at my funeral? How am I going to be remembered? Maybe you've thought about that, maybe you haven't. You know, the truth is, you probably, for most of us, we won't be remembered by an encyclopedia entry that's pages long. What happens is that we get remembered by little pithy statements or summaries or whatever. I remember when I was much younger listening to Robert Klein, a New York, New Jersey kind of comedian, who remembered, he'd talk often about his school days. And he mentioned that James Abram Garfield, 20th President of the United States, assassinated by a disappointed office seeker. And he made, I can't be like Robert Klein, but he would make fun of the fact that that's all he ever learned about James Abram Garfield, is that he was a president and he was shot by a disappointed office seeker. And that no matter what book they looked in or whatever, that this is how this guy's going to be remembered for the rest of humanity's existence. He was shot by a disappointed office seeker. And, I look up a little bit about James Abram Garfield. Came from a poor family, kind of raised himself up by his own bootstraps, and he accomplished a lot in life. And he wasn't president for very long, but what happened, he was a conservative Republican at the time, and he, when you get to be president or in any political office, you get to give out all kinds of jobs, and the sheer politicalness, or whatever the word, the politics involved in giving those jobs out, the patronage, upset a lot of people. Some people expected jobs, didn't get them, including this one crazy person who ended up shooting him. But even his own supporters were disappointed by the fact that he had pretty much was trying to give jobs out to all of his friends. Well, I didn't know all that about Garfield, and if you look it up, I already looked it up in that dictionary. It just says he was 20th president, that he was assassinated. Doesn't say by whom or what the circumstances were. But the point is that this president's going to be remembered, if he's remembered at all, by basically who shot him and why. And that's it. Well, what if in your life you couldn't get a paragraph? You couldn't get a couple pages, couldn't even get a paragraph. You're just going to get one line. What would it say? If you were allowed to have a one-line epitaph on your tombstone, what would it say? Maybe you never think about that. How would that read? Well, just for instance, now they've got Josh with the dictionary. Let's name some people. Here's a dictionary. It's just a regular Webster's Scholar Collegiate Dictionary that only gets a line. You can name some famous people that aren't alive anymore. Anybody. And we'll get Josh to look them up. Mark Twain. See what it says about Mark Twain. Yeah, if you only had a little bit, Twain, T.W. Hopefully you can see over there. Got enough light. He's just going to have the most basic of information, usually. Maybe. See, Samuel Clemens. U.S. writer and humorist. So there you go. There's a, you know, a person that had a multifaceted life, and all it is, all if you get one line, he's a writer and a humorist. You know, what if you only have could get one line? Well, what I'd like to do today is take a look at the topic of reputation. I'd like to see what the Bible says about it. Look at some examples from history and also from the Bible, and or from history outside the Bible, from history inside the Bible. And all the while, as we go through this topic, and it's not going to be a lengthy discussion, but all the while, what I'd like you to think about, especially some of you that are younger than me, because I didn't used to think about this, but I'm starting to now. What are people going to say about me? Or you think about yourself. What are people going to say about you? What's that one-line epitaph going to be about your life? And how will you be remembered? If you could be remembered by just one thing, what would it be? Just keep that question in mind. And you may say, well, does it matter? You know, why do we have to worry about what our reputation is? You know, I'll just live life the way I see fit to live it, the way I should live it. Maybe you say I'd live it the way God says to live it, and just let the chips fall where they may, and I don't really care what people think. Well, in one sense, you can't. I mean, when it comes to obeying God. But in another sense, it does matter what people think, in the sense that a reputation is something that's important. And the Bible tells us that. In the Proverbs, in chapter 22 of the book of Proverbs, we read something about a good name. And a good name is a good thing. The Bible doesn't put it down or criticize it. Obviously here I'm not talking about disobeying God or compromising in order to have a good name. That's not the subject here. The subject is what kind of a life am I living, and how will that be remembered? In Proverbs chapter 22, just the first verse there, it says, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. In other words, being thought well of rather than silver and gold. And it's interesting the way it's worded there, that a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. I don't know if any of you visit cemeteries. Other, you know, we do it when funerals or to visit the graves of loved ones, or perhaps you live near one. Shelby grew up near a cemetery, and every once in a while we'd get over there, the family, the little kids would like to go over and see it. And you go and look at the tombstones and see what they say. Now, I've never seen this, but maybe you have. You ever seen a tombstone with a dollar sign on it? No. Why? And even though the most avaricious, the most greedy person, in the end, one, can't take it with him, and two, probably realizes that that's not what life is all about. We don't put on there how many dollars we accumulated by the end, like we're keeping score. We may live our lives like that, some people, but by the time your life is over, you realize there's more to it than that. So you don't see a dollar sign on a tombstone. And the scriptures tell us here that a good name is much more important than that. You know, what kind of a life did this person live? Not how many toys did he accumulate or how much wealth did he have. In the end, human beings realize that Proverbs 22 verse 1 is actually true. And it is more important what kind of a person we are, what's going on inside, than what we've accumulated or even what we've accomplished in terms of building things, doing things, whatever. Is that what kind of a person we are? The fact that, Brandon and I are talking. He landscapes his yard, or you build a house, or you accomplish something in sports. All these things are wonderful things, but that's not what's really on the inside, is it? That's not what we are. In Ecclesiastes chapter 7, we read the same thought there. In Ecclesiastes chapter 7, beginning in the first verse, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Now, the context here of verses 1 through 4 is the house of mourning. In other words, the kind of conclusions you come to and the kind of observations one makes at the time of death. Maybe not of your own death. You can't have too many observations then, but we tend to think about our lives when we're in the context of mourning, like, you know, those of us have been to any funerals recently. You start thinking about your own life, not just about the life of the one that's departed. And that's the time we tend to think about legacies, is when, you know, our lives are about up, or perhaps when we're experiencing the death of someone else. What kind of a legacy will you leave? What kind of a legacy will I leave? What will my reputation be? And it's, again, it's not important necessarily what people think, but the point, we give people the information that they need to think what they're going to think. What will they say? What kind of a boss or co-worker or employee were we? All those types of things. So again, under the heading, if you want to put it that way, or the question of whether or not it matters, you remember in Acts chapter 6, and you don't need to turn there because you remember the story about when they chose the deacons to help do some of the physical work in the early church there. It says in those days that a number of disciples were multiplied, and there was that disputation because certain widows weren't being taken care of very well. And they called the multitude of the disciples together, the apostles did, and they said, well, we shouldn't be waiting on tables. We need to devote our time to the ministry of the word and so forth, and prayer. So they said, look out from among yourselves 7 men of honest report, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom. So the idea was to look for some people that had a good reputation. It's not only something that is important in the terms of a legacy, which it seems to be saying in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, but there's actually circumstances in this life right now where a good reputation is important and important to God. It was important here in choosing people to serve in the church. You can also read in 1 Timothy chapter 3 where it says that your elders or bishops, the overseers in the church, are to be blameless. I mean, that's a pretty high bar. That's a sterling reputation. In Titus chapter, in fact, I'm going to turn to the book of Titus. It talks about bishops there, but it also just talks in general terms about everybody. In the second chapter, Titus chapter 2, it says, speak the things which are sound doctrine, Titus chapter 2 and verse 1, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, and so forth. You know, the older men. And here, there's to live a certain way of life. And this is a way that gives them a good name. And it's important now. It says also that the older women are to also be sober and grave and so forth. It goes in verse 4, to be discreet and so forth. Young men, he addresses in chapter 2, verse 6. And even gets to servants, employees or slaves in verse 9. So everybody has their role, but as Christians, it's important that we fill whatever role that is in an honorable and a reputable way. And if we do that, and if we are reputable, we will have a good reputation. Same word there, same source. So a good reputation is something that applies to everybody, and it doesn't only apply after we're gone. It applies during our lives as well. Now, you could say, and I would like to say the same thing, that my life is more complicated than a line in a book or a line on a tombstone. It's going to take more than a phrase to describe my life, and it's not fair. Okay, I won't argue with that, but the fact is, in that book there, Mark Twain only got, you know, 2 words, and his birth and his death dates. He certainly accomplished, you know, quite a bit in his life. So the reality of it is that in certain circles anyway, our lives are going to be summed up very briefly. And I think it probably doesn't hurt to think about it in those terms. That if you had to summarize your life, what would that summary say? I think it's worth thinking about. Now, if we think historically, what are people remembered for? I happened to see something about James Cash Penny. Anybody know anything about J.C. Penny? I don't know from, you know, He and I lived for 15 years on the earth together. I don't remember much about his life. I've read about it since then. Anybody know anything about J.C. Penney? In his first foray into business, and he was the son of a preacher, in fact, several generations of preachers, so he's religious. In his first, he was going to be a butcher. Or he was a butcher. He lost everything. Lost the business, lost all he had invested in it. And the main reason was because he would not bribe the local restaurateur, or maybe plural, but at least one, who required a fifth of brandy or something once, you know, every week or every month or whatever. I think it was every week. And that's how you got to sell him meat for his restaurant. And if you didn't sell him meat, you weren't going to make it in this town. He didn't do it. He wouldn't give in to the temptation to offer a bribe, and he didn't get the job, and he lost his business. But later on, he would say that, you know, certainly that was not never a mistake. That was important to him because he was a man of principle. In fact, when he first started into retailing, does anybody know what the JCPenney stores were called at first? Golden Rule. And he literally meant that. At that time, which would have been in the 20s, I believe. I might be wrong there. I think it was in the 20s. It was kind of buyer beware. If you were shopping, you took your chances. You know, you paid your pennies and took your chances because you didn't know what you were getting. And the concept that somebody was going to sell you a product, not necessarily the cheapest guy, but that he was going to stand behind what he sold you. And if you didn't like it, you could bring it back. And he'd give you your money back or give you another item. That we take for granted now. That was a very new and different concept in 1920. I forgot the exact date that he started his store. By the time he died in 1971, I think there were something like 1,600 stores. And the personal value of his stock in 1971 was $24 million, which would be hundreds of millions, you know, approaching a billion today. But he said, because he gave up the control of his stores, not the control, he gave up day-to-day management of his stores in the 30s. So he hadn't been around that long yet. And he started focusing on training his people in a culture, in a way of thinking. And the stores were known for having a certain quality about them. Again, they weren't the cheapest store on the block necessarily, but they stood behind their product. And Sears, you know, did the same thing. It's another example, but J.C. Penney was known for that. And he wrote a lot. He wrote in their internal, whatever you want to call it, newsletters that they had in training. And he's prolific. Got books and books full of things that he's written. One of the things he said, though, that stands out here that I wanted to share is that he said, "I would rather be known as a Christian than as a merchant." And of course, I think we all identify with that. That whatever we do in life, in this room, in many different things, but whatever it is we do it in a way that first gives glory to our Father in heaven. And that's the reputation that we have. And James Cash Penney had a certain reputation, and he passed that culture on to his stores. I think about Jimmy Carter. People remember Jimmy Carter's presidency. It was kind of, at least for me, nondescript. It wasn't a terribly successful presidency. Does anybody disagree with me there? I mean, no tremendous achievements. We had hostages and through most of it. But you know, you look at the man, and he's a tireless worker for Habitat for Humanity. He's been doing it for years. He can barely get around, but he gets out there with his nail pouch on and works. And he's also you may disagree with his politics, but he's one who works for peace. And he's had that kind. That to me, I think that's what people are going to remember Jimmy Carter for more than what kind of a president he was. I think it's my opinion. On the other hand, you got somebody like an O.J. Simpson, who had a tremendous football career, and a acting career, and then we can argue about guilt or innocence, but was involved one way or another in a situation with a wife that tarnished his name forever. And, you know, that's sad. And you can think through lots of different people. You can think of the Rockefellers and the Gettys. And I don't know how it was. I wasn't around then. I don't know how they made their money and who they took advantage of. But once they got it, they gave it away. They gave it away. So their legacy is more about what they've established, what they've been able to accomplish with their money and the foundations have accomplished with their money than perhaps about how they got the money in the first place. You could be a Hitler or a Stalin or a Pol Pot or an Idi Amin, and you got a terrible legacy there, don't you? Because how they ended up. You could go on and on through. People have, you mention a name, mention Mother Teresa, and a picture comes to mind of a servant. You know, mention Lee Harvey Oswald or John Wilkes Booth, a picture comes to mind of a criminal or an assassin. You could go on and on and on. But what I think is true about those examples, and we want to look at the Bible examples too, is that regardless of how complicated somebody's life was, in the end, the memory is much simpler. And I think it should give us pause. Now, how about in the Bible? You know, I'll just throw this open here. I mean, think about people in the Bible that are, it's two categories maybe here. Either we only know basically one thing about them, or whatever it is we remember or that comes to mind when you mention their name is basically one thing. It's just anybody. Just throw some names out here. Huh? Enoch. Enoch. What comes to mind when you think of Enoch? Maybe different for you than... Hmm? Walk with God. That's what comes to my mind. Enoch walked with God. We don't know a whole lot else about Enoch. Well, you know, he was taken and so forth, but he walked with God. How would you like to be known throughout eternity as the one who walked with God? I mean, what a privilege that is. That's one I thought of. Had anybody else? Good or bad? Jay, okay. Oh, I didn't think of... tell us about... I remember though. Put the 10 pin through him. I had forgotten about that story. Then you brought up the name. I said, oh, I remember what you did. Yeah. And so she'll always be remembered for that, regardless of what else she did in her life. Anybody else? Esther. What's Esther remembered for? How do you remember her? Okay. I didn't bring my pen down. I was going to add some more Esther. Keep going. Daniel, what do you remember Daniel for? Mm-hmm. How about Cain? We know a lot of, we know some things about Cain, but what do we remember Cain for? Killed his brother. Yeah, forever. He'll be known as the guy who killed his brother. First one. Anybody else? Who comes to mind? How about, go ahead. Alexander the coppersmith. And what's he remembered for? Did Paul much evil? I didn't have that down either. Alexander. I had Demas because Demas forsook him. Alexander the coppersmith. Boy, what a memory. That's a great one. But, you know, he was a coppersmith, so we know one thing about him, but he's going to be known forever as the person who caused Paul trouble. How about Lot's wife? You know, for one thing, she wanted to go back. You know, she longed for that system. Anybody else? Moses? Oh, I think, well, he's way too complicated for me. Great leader, okay. Ten Commandments, yeah. Solomon. What do you remember him as? Wisest man. Uh-huh. How many is too many? No. How about Rahab? I was thinking, a whole couple of people popped into my Rahab. Yeah, took care, but you know, protected the spies, and one of the spies, Caleb, is all we know. Basically, he was a spy along with Joshua that told the truth. How about, I'd have thought of one, Hur. Yeah. Hur, remember Hur? Held up Moses' hand. That's all we know about him. He went up the mountain with Moses and held up the hand. On the hill, I mean, he accompanied Moses on some different things, but he held up Moses' hand. And it's recorded forever. How about Hannah? Samuel's mother, you know, praying. You give the child, that's one thing. Some people are only mentioned very briefly. Jabez. You know, get one mention there. He prayed to God would expand his borders, and God did. One mention. I thought of a bunch of Ananias and Sapphira. You know, that was kind of a bad deal there for them. How about Judas? Judas Iscariot. I mean, there's a lot about him there, but he's known for one thing. One thing. Us, okay. Yeah. Us, a touch, yeah. I mean, this is, one of my favorites is Eldad and Medad that were preaching, and Joshua was ready to go out and stop them, and Moses said, yeah, let them preach. I wish everybody could preach under inspiration, you know. There's all kinds of people in the Bible that get one mention, some for good, some for bad, and people that are remembered for one thing, like a Judas. So when I think through these things, I mean, how am I going to be remembered? You know, Nabal, his name means fool, and he was ready to, you know, risk his whole family, all of his possessions because he wouldn't help David. I'm sure his life must have had a lot of good in it. You know, he can't be a total idiot. I mean, he had his wealth, but he's going to be remembered for that, or he has been remembered for that. And I think, well, what am I going to be remembered for? You know, because I'm sure if in the resurrection, depending on what state of humility some of these people are in that have been remembered for bad things, they may come up with and want to list all the good things they did in their life, and maybe they did. But the fact is that they've been remembered for perhaps a bad thing or the last thing they did or whatever. And that's the way it is. So it makes me think, well, how am I going to be remembered? How do I want to be remembered? If I could be remembered for just one thing, what would it be? Hopefully it wouldn't be something foolish like some of the ones we just talked about, but something more positive like walking with God or being a great leader or holding up somebody's hands or those types of things. Well, you might think, well, I'm already too old. I mean, I already have a reputation. You know, for some of us in this room, we've lived more of our lives than what we got coming. Okay? So you may think, well, our reputation is pretty much sealed. Is that true? Can't change it. Well, I don't think so. In Ezekiel chapter 18, the principle's there. So it's hope for us. And I say us. I'm not that old yet, but I'm getting there. I'll probably live longer than I'm going to live from now on. Ezekiel 18, starting in verse 2. And this is the word of the Eternal had come to Ezekiel and said, yeah, if I can read. What do you mean, this proverb concerning, wait a minute, I gotta get where I got more light, sorry. Proverb concerning the land of Israel saying that the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are on edge, meaning that the children have to suffer for the sins of the father and vice versa. And that's, you know, that's the proverb. That was the saying. And if you go through here in chapter 18, we'll read again and again. They say, well, no, that's not really the way it's going to be. Not anymore. Because, and that's what it says in verse 3. Verse 4 says, all souls are mine, and the soul of the Father is the soul, you know, all lives are mine, he's saying. And the one who sins is going to die. You don't have to die for your father's sins, and you're not going to live because your father was righteous. And that's the principle here. In verse 9. It starts in verse 5. It says, if a man is just and does that which is right, verse 9, and walked in my, and it says, walked in my ways and so forth, and it says that he is just, he shall surely live, in verse 9. And then it says that if he has a son, in verse 10, who is the opposite, who doesn't obey me, and you skip down to verse 13, he said he's not going to live. his blood shall be shed upon him. And then in verse 14 it says, well, if he has a son who sees the error of his father's ways and lives rightly, then he'll live. And he just goes through here back and forth, saying, look, if you will reap the results of your own life. You don't have to suffer and die in this context here. You don't have to die because your father was an evil person. You can change. And it goes through. We could read it over and over again. It continues to make the same point all the way through the chapter. And in Luke, I'm going to go to Luke chapter 15. Luke 15, verse 1. And here again, the scribes and the Pharisees were complaining about Jesus eating with sinners and spending time with them and so forth. And he said, you know, which one of you has 100 sheep and you lose one, you don't leave the 99 and go look for the one. And when you find it, you're excited. And verse 6, he called us, call your friends and neighbors and you say, rejoice with me because I found this one that we lost. And verse 7 says, likewise, there's joy in heaven over one sinner that repents. Oh, more than over 99 that are just and don't need repentance. So that God's perspective is more like, well, what your past is not important. What's important is that you repent and change. And we have a lot of examples in the Bible of people who changed. They had a different reputation. When it was all said and done, their reputation was different than that you may have concluded during their lifetime. Now, can you think of any there? Some of them ended up good, started off bad. Some started off bad, start off good, end up bad, start off bad, end up good. Both ways we have in the Bible. Anybody think of some examples there? Paul's the classic. Start off the biggest enemy the church had, and got to be a great apostle, and did a lot of good. Judas. I didn't know whether to put Judas or not, because I know Jesus knew that he was going to be the one from the beginning, but he hadn't killed anybody yet. But yeah, he certainly turned bad, ended up bad. Anybody else? Go ahead. David, what do you... Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think he started good and ended good, basically. He definitely had his ups and downs in between. Yeah, I mean that's typical. I think that's typical with any of us. We have our ups and downs. I'm trying to look more for examples where people are totally on one side and end up on the other. Okay. Okay. What is what? Saul's a classic. Started off good, ended up all a mess. How about another king who's famous for going the other way? Manasseh. It was so evil. In fact, the book of Kings doesn't even talk about his good end, but in Chronicles it talks about how he repented after being captured, and he actually started tearing down the altars and did good things, but the people didn't follow him. The land was already pretty evil, but he actually ended up on better than he started. Anybody else? How about... Oh, you know who I didn't mention before? That doesn't matter. Well, yeah, I didn't even consider that. Lucifer had everything. Yeah, that's great. Diotrephes in the book of second John, I don't remember which one it is. How about How about Solomon? Mr. Charles mentioned Solomon. He started off, everything going for him and ended up, I'm not his judge, but he certainly got bad. Now, whether he ever got it turned around again at the end of his life, I'm not his judge there. But he started off on the right foot and ended up turning aside. I wrote down, how about James, Jesus' brother? He didn't believe him. He was at first. He ended up being converted. That was one I thought of. Samson, I wasn't sure where to put him. But he flipped and flopped, and maybe, I'm not sure. Again, I don't know how he ended up. He was very much caught up in the world as a he was a judge of Israel, but he was caught up in the world. But in the end, he tried to do something good there. Again, I'm not his judge. That's maybe a little more complicated. I thought of another one with that we're not given his name, but the individual that Paul ordered put out of the church in 1 Corinthians for his sins, and in 2 Corinthians he's saying let the man back in. You know, he's repented, let him back into fellowship. So there was a good ending. So the point of that is it doesn't matter how you start out; it really matters how you end up. That's what really counts. And the Bible's clear about that. We know that. Now, the real young ones are downstairs. But another objection one could have is, well, I'm too young. It doesn't matter yet. You can say I'm too old and can't change my reputation. Or you can say I'm so young that I've got plenty of years to make my reputation. And Proverbs 20 and verse 11, you're familiar with what it says, but it says even a child, even like the ones we have downstairs, they're known by their doings. You have a reputation even when you're young. We had camp with all the nieces and nephews this week, and two grandchildren. So we had 10 kids here, as long as we could tolerate it. The four older ones, well, not the four, four of the older ones were problems. They might only be whatever they are, 11, 12, whatever, 13, but they've got a reputation already in my book anyway. And if we do it again, we're not having them. They're too old. Their reputation's set enough that we're not going to mess with it. We'll have the younger ones if we have it. So when we're young, we have a reputation, whether we want it or not, or whether we think it matters. It does matter. God says a child is known by his doing. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, so those of us with young children, we want to, I'm sure you do, impress that on your children, that it does matter what they do. And children can make decisions that affect them for the rest of their lives. They make those decisions when they're children, but it has an impact on their lives, not just their reputation, but how the rest of their lives. So I'm sure those of you with younger children are teaching them that. Of course, just because you tell them that doesn't mean they believe you, but you tell them anyway. Verse 9 in Ecclesiastes 11 says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you all the days of your life, or your youth, and walk in the ways of your heart, and in the sight of your eyes, and know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment." And then it says that your youth is vanity, not meaning that it's a waste of time, but that it's fleeting. You're only young for a little while. Enjoy it. But think about it, because what choices you make, what decisions you make, will have lasting consequences. They don't just say, I was young then, doesn't matter. No, it does matter, and it will affect you for the rest of your lives. Can you think of, now, going back to the Bible, are there some examples from Scripture of people who were young? Now, I'm not saying young like they're 8 necessarily or 10, but young comparatively, who made decisions that affected themselves or others in a big way? Any young people in Scripture? Yeah. Josiah. Mm-hmm. Yes. He's the youngest one of the ones I think of that had any positive impact when they were young. And his choices and decisions affected the whole nation. Not just himself. Anybody else? For good, it could be for good or for bad. David was, I don't know that we have exact, people guess. I don't know. How old people think he was? He was a lad of some sort. He was, compared to the people who were in the army, he was a kid. I don't know, maybe a teenager. I don't know. But he was young. He was young when he challenged Goliath. And that changed the history of Israel. So, that was for positive, for good. Anybody else you can think of as young that had a... Samuel, okay. I didn't even have him down. Mm-hmm. Worked there with Eli as a youth. Yeah. These are positive examples. Any other positive or negative? Joseph, yeah. He was. We don't know years, but he was young and influential. Jesus, yeah. 12 years old in the temple, talking to the big shots and amazing them. And when his ministry, in terms of society, he was still pretty young. He wasn't one. He wasn't an elder. He was in his 30s, or just barely 30. Mary. She was certainly young. Uh-huh. Yeah, I didn't have her down. It wouldn't have been unusual for somebody 15 years old to be engaged to be. I mean, that would have, they did it early. Like North Carolina, South Carolina?
Yeah.
Down south, they still get married pretty young. A lot of times. I had a friend who was in her mid-20s, I had a friend who married a girl down there in her mid-20s, and she was an old maid. She was maybe 25, maybe not quite. She was 23, 25, and she was already an old maid. She was, giving up her good down there. They didn't, and my friend from way up here met her and married her. Saved her from old maiddom or whatever. I think she's only 20 couple, but all of her sisters, all of her friends, everybody's all married, got five kids by now. And she's 20 couple and not married, and that was an old maid. So there's places like that. How about Miriam? Think about Miriam. We don't know how old she was, but she's watching over her brother, had the nerve to go up to the queen there and suggest an Israelite wet nurse and all this. I mean, that's pretty influential. Any negative example? He wasn't that old. I mean, Jesus' disciples were around his age. But I thought of somebody who was fairly young who made a really bad choice that he paid for, and he and his descendants paid for the... Yeah, we don't know how it was. Yeah. Esau. Esau's the one. But Cain is definitely true also. But Esau. We don't know how old he was, but he gave up his birthright. What a bad choice. And he had a... Huh? I thought about them too. I don't even put them down, but yeah, bad choices there, with Lot and his daughters, which all go back to where they chose to live in the first, where Dad and Mom chose to live in the first place. So, children are responsible for the decisions they make, and in some cases, maybe Esau wasn't a child in the sense that he was 10 or 12, but he was fairly young when he made the choice that affected, his descendants forever, and that's sad. That's sad, and the lesson to learn from that is no matter how old we are, whether we're very young or very old, our decisions affect ourselves and lots of other people, and they have a long-term effect. So, does it matter? Well, does your reputation matter? I think it does. The Bible makes it clear that a good name is important. And whether you think that you deserve a whole encyclopedia entry that goes on, for a couple pages or not, you're probably going to, in some arenas, your life is going to be summarized in a phrase. And I think it's worthwhile to think about what that phrase might be or what you want it to be. And you're not too old and you're not too young to have an impact on that. In Acts chapter 16, just a couple of scriptures real quick here at the end. Reputation has an impact. Even in this life, as I said before. In Acts chapter 16 and verse 1, it says that this is Paul traveling here. He came to Derbe and Lystra, and a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a certain woman, and so forth. It's talking about, in verse 2, it says, who was well reported by his brothers that were in Lystra and Iconium. And in this case, it gave him an opportunity, because he was well spoken of, it gave him an opportunity for service in the church. Timothy was, you know, a great servant in the early church there. In Romans, chapter 1, and starting in verse 8, or just reading verse 8, actually. He's writing to the Romans. He says, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. Wow. Now, that's not a particular person. That's a congregation there. Or at least different congregations, perhaps, in a city. But their faith spoken of throughout the whole world. What a way to be remembered. In the end of the book of Romans, chapter 16, and verse 19. No, that's not what I want. Oh, here it is. Yeah. For your obedience is come around unto all men. So, you know, the reputation went around. And it talks about in Hebrews 11, again, the fact that there was these people in the faith chapter there received good report because of their faith. And it's faith in God which leads to a good reputation. That's got to be the foundation for it. Our relationship with God the Father and with His Son Jesus. That's the source of all that's good. So, that's the purpose today. Just to get you to think about it. You're never too young or too old to be concerned about your reputation. And the fact is, you will be remembered for something. What will it be?